Completes this morning's session. Good afternoon. We're all back here. Welcome. I hope you enjoyed your lunch. The first item on our afternoon agenda is item number 652.
Just as a point of clarification, we've got 2 hours and 10 minutes scheduled for this afternoon. Is it your intention to do all of these items?
So I have lost most of the people who are planning on testifying on items 653 and 654, which I had intended to read together, so my suspicion is the presentation will be much, much briefer than was originally anticipated. So it is my hope we get out of here in the next hour.
I'm just wondering, the last item, the framework for the Smart City Initiative, is that something that could be moved?
Let me work on that while we're. Let's go ahead and go to the first item, and let me confer with staff on that issue.
Okay,
so why don't we start with 652?
We'll keep our presentation to 30 minutes or less.
Great.
652, adopt parking management manual to establish guidelines for managing public parking in the city of Portland.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. The parking management manual we are bringing forward today establishes operational guidelines for implementing City Council-adopted parking management policies found in our transportation system plan and also in the comprehensive land use plan. The manual also fulfills Council direction from April 2016 ordinance that directed PBOT staff to create a plan for implementing performance-based pricing. The goal of the manual is to translate Council direction into guidelines that are a starting point for staff to consistently and fairly respond to the questions received in day-to-day operations. Any new parking management districts and changes to existing enforcement hours will come back to City Council for approval prior to implementation. We greatly appreciate the work of both the consultants and the Stakeholder Advisory Committee for committing their time and energy over the last 18 months. Our consultants, Rick Williams and William Reynolds, are presenting the Stakeholder Advisory Committee recommendations for the parking management manual. And Division Manager with PBOT Parking Operations, Melissa McCready, is here to answer additional questions. So three of you, come on up.
Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, my name is Rick Williams with Rick Williams Consulting. It's really a pleasure to be here and to have had the opportunity to work on this. In the interest of time, my partner William Reynolds will give you a brief PowerPoint presentation that summarizes the elements of the manual itself. And then William, Melissa, and myself will be here at the end of that to answer your questions. So
that's
thank
good.
You very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name again, William Reynolds with Rick Williams Consulting, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for that introduction. Just to share a little bit of additional background before diving into the contents of the manual, the direction to develop a performance-based process for managing parking was actually initiated more than 3 years ago as a key recommendation that emerged from the outreach process associated with developing the 2015 citywide parking strategy. So that extensive process included communication with close to 1,000 individuals and more than 50 briefings, meetings, public events throughout the city. A consistent theme that emerged was a desire to manage parking using a transparent, data-driven approach referred to as performance-based parking management. So as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, with Resolution 37204 in April 2016, Council directed PBOT to develop this parking-based management program that formalizes those operational guidelines to implement city policy. So it's been developed over the last 18 months.
You've got a box here that's blocking your screen.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Graphic.
So it's been developed over the last 18 months, and it essentially just relies on standardized guidelines, performance measures, and exception processes in order to consistently and transparently manage Portland's public parking system based on annual data collection efforts. So what you see on the slide now are the chapters, each of the key chapters within the manual, and I'll use this brief 9-slide presentation to just walk through each of these chapters, some of the key contents, and then the three of us can answer questions at the end when they arise. So each of these chapters provides clear guidelines on each of the topics referenced to serve as a resource manual, essentially to help add clarity and consistency to parking management questions that PBOT gets asked on a daily basis. Each chapter was developed specifically by the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, who we are here to represent today, and it's based on a performance-based process that uses data, as I mentioned, annual data collection efforts, and best management practice to inform parking management practices citywide. So what you see here is the actual 10-member Stakeholder Advisory Committee who led the development of this parking management manual, and that includes the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, Portland Business Alliance, Venture Portland, the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, Portlanders for Parking Reform, the Central East Side Industrial Council, the Northwest District, GOLOI, the Portland Freight Committee, and the Downtown Neighborhood Association. Many of these organizations have provided letters of support, and several are here today. So with that, I'll go and get into each one of the individual chapters. The first chapter, Chapter 2, refers to parking management districts. And more specifically, outlines processes for going about establishing new parking management districts within commercial corridors around the city. So there's currently no guidelines for establishing parking management districts. And so the parking management manual establishes clear guidelines, including an 8-step process, one of which would be establishing a work group of business representatives and district residents who would be responsible for recommending parking management strategies within that parking management district, and then monitoring performance and reviewing the annual data collection efforts within that parking management district. So the process, importantly, includes outreach to surrounding communities, specifically including nearby historically underserved communities of color, and any potential impacts from parking management within the commercial corridors would therefore have an opportunity to make sure they're mitigated in the surrounding neighborhoods. So once a parking management district has been established, one of the parking management strategies that may emerge at the recommendation of the district representatives would be potentially moving to on-street paid parking. So the parking management manual clarifies existing city policy and establishes a series of requirements that must be met before implementing a new meter district within a parking management district. So as noted in the parking management toolbox, which came before City Council in January of this year, meters should really only be used as a tool to manage demand in commercial corridors after time limits, coupled with consistent enforcement, are not able to achieve stated performance objectives. That is to say, demand simply exceeds the ability for the system to serve it effectively. Those who are seeking to get to their destination aren't able to find a spot quickly and easily. At that point, then meters may be considered. So overall, existing city policy was used to develop all of the guidelines within Chapter 2, and it simply helps to add additional clarity, ensuring transparency in the implementation of city policy. Chapter 3 deals with details surrounding the implementation of time limits. So one of the key recommendations of this chapter is to standardize time limits citywide using essentially three tiers, 15 or 30 minutes for very short-term parking needs, two-hour parking areas, and four-hour parking areas. And importantly, actually, these three tiers have already been implemented in all five existing meter districts around the city. And these guidelines are used to serve as a tool for future parking management districts as they emerge within commercial corridors. So for new parking management districts, another recommendation is to default to 2 hours as the first tier of time limits in the area, starting with enforcement at 10 a.m., and then adjustments to those would be based on data as needed through a performance-based process. The next chapter deals with pricing, or more specifically using data, using a data-driven approach to inform pricing adjustments within meter districts. So to implement a performance-based process, the Parking Management Manual establishes clear performance targets. That's specifically goal occupancy range of 65% to 85% during peak hours. And then it provides guidelines for how to go about adjusting rates annually if needed, may not be needed if it falls within that range, but those adjustments would be based on annual data collection efforts. And the primary goal would really to be support economic vitality and allow visitors to quickly and easily find convenient parking even during peak hours. So at the core of this is a standardized annual review process. Tiered rate adjustments are used are established to allow for a clear, transparent, data-driven approach. Further, all proposed rate adjustments emerging from this process will come before council each year. Other cities that have implemented performance-based pricing include San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, D.C. They've all found it to be an effective method to adjust rates based on data and therefore balance demands more effectively across the system. So ultimately, the goal of a performance-based pricing adjustment system is to provide additional parking options for all users. So rate increases would be targeted in only areas with the highest demands, and this allows for rate reductions in lower demand areas, providing more opportunity for individuals to find on-street parking at a more affordable rate within each meter district. This is also coupled with the off-street system. The off-street rates will continue to provide a lower cost option. And additionally, Smart Park Garages offer a discounted monthly pass for low-income residents. So taken together, the performance-based approach, the goal is to provide a variety of parking options within each area. The next chapter is event districts, or more specifically, on-street management during events at larger venues. So there's currently no guidelines for establishing new event districts around large venues. And working with the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, we determined that large venues, in this case, would be defined as those with a capacity of 10,000 or more, which takes the list down to what you see on the screen, Providence Park, which currently does include an on-street event district, and then Rose Quarter and the Convention Center. So we worked with the Rose Quarter and Convention Center to come up with some of the guidelines in this chapter. And essentially, the Parking Management Manual establishes a process for managing on-street public parking during events, including a process for how to go about adjusting rates based on data collected during actual events at these venues. And the goal would be to encourage the use of alternative modes, reduce congestion around these venues, and minimize impacts on the surrounding neighborhoods. So the Oregon Convention Center and the Rose Quarter are supportive of the guidelines we've developed. And the last key chapter I want to discuss is related to truck loading zones, on-street truck loading zones. So the goal with this chapter was to establish consistent loading zone management practices citywide. So the Parking Management Manual establishes 5 standard loading zone options, which is actually reduced from 44 different loading zone signs that are you can find around the city today. Wow. The goal of this reduced number of signs is to improve consistency and allow both freight operators and visitors to easily find available parking.
Thank you.
So we worked with the Portland Freight Committee. We met with them several times throughout this process. They support the proposed guidelines. They've provided a letter of support, and they note in their letter that they feel these guidelines will support businesses, they'll continue to support businesses with on-street delivery needs while still allowing equitable access for all users outside of those loading zone time periods. So that concludes the presentation. I just wanted to show the contents again, but please, we are here to answer questions and dive into the details. Thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Fritz.
I want to acknowledge right off the bat here that I've so far had two kind bars to eat all day, so I am somewhat cranky.
Okay.
And I'm really concerned about, this is a fairly massive policy document on parking and has not, doesn't have the kind of public input I would have expected at a hearing of this magnitude. So for various reasons, it's starting 2 hours late, maybe one of them. I'm concerned to start off with that the ordinance says that the ordinance is binding city policy. It seems to me that some of the things in the manual are new and are not existing binding city policy. So maybe I can just go through some of the concerns I have. Just from looking through it fairly briefly, in Chapter 1, the policy identifies six key objectives, equity is not mentioned. And so I'm not seeing, throughout this manual, I'm not seeing attention to who benefits, who burdens, who gets to make the decisions. A lot of the decisions are being made by the people who live close by or the businesses. What about the employees? What about other visitors? What about impacts on low-income folks who may be needing to park in an area for various reasons?
Well, I think in terms of the new districts, because the existing districts are in place, in terms of the new districts, the formation of the stakeholder advisory committees that will evaluate the process of establishing a district, the intent would be to include those populations.
But that's not stated in here. So if this is binding city policy, then I should think it should be stated in here. I thought when the last time we discussed it, we were going to do some pilot projects before completely re-arching the system. Is that
okay?
Is that,
so
am I not
we're doing
correctly?
The pilots for the permits, for our area parking permits. This has nothing to do with permits. This is just about establishing process so that when we get contacted by a community to come out and look at their parking problems or their perceived parking problems, we can establish a process to do data collection and to do some outreach in those areas to learn how we could manage their parking challenges. And it would be a lot of outreach behind that before we would establish anything. And if we were to bring something forward, it would come to council first before any kind of adoption would be happening for a new district. This is just for new districts.
Okay, that's helpful. For instance, on page 12, when it says establish a work group, it should specify looking at who may be particularly burdened, and it may not necessarily be the residents and business owners living nearby. For step 7, implementation, on page 13, it says once approved, PBOT will lead implementation of the recommended parking management strategies. Does that? I don't see a point where it says it comes back to council for approval.
It would. So that, we can certainly add that.
You can certainly add that. It's certainly the intent.
That needs to be clarified.
Because of the formation of a new district, council
would it would come back. Is that correct?
Yes, because...
But the steps as outlined don't say that it does.
Anytime we establish a new district, would have to come to council for approval.
Because it would be a new district, which council would then formally establish, once the process is determined by the stakeholder process, Their determination would come to you for approval to establish
it
as a formal parking management district
in the manual. The minimum size of 80 on-street stalls, how did you get to that number?
That's a standard that's within best practices around the country. That's a place to start, certainly once the process begins. It's also an establishment. There's certain economies of scale that work for enforcement and establishment of a district that the 80 stalls begins with. But that can be expanded or contracted per the stakeholder process and determining where the data collection occurs.
Well, it can't, though. If this is binding city policy and it says it has to be at least 80, then we can't make it.
To begin the discussion.
And it would need to be at least 80 spaces because of parking enforcement to make it an efficient management of a district. If we're going to implement parking regulation, we need to be able to enforce it.
Okay. Moving to page 43, it talks about variable meter pricing and that this manual establishes an hourly rate ranging between $1 and $5 per hour. That's the range that which would be approved by council, then recommended that the PBOT director has the authority to make meter rate adjustments that remain within this range. So that sounds to me like the commissioner in charge of transportation gets to decide whether a meter is $1 an hour or $5 an hour. Is that correct?
That would be included in the rate. The director would put that in the rate schedule that comes to you every year.
And it would be incremental increases, and it's based on data collection.
Well, again, it doesn't say that that's approved by council. It says it's approved by the director.
It would still have to come before council for the transportation council fee schedule.
And actually, then, raised the same question last week with our check-in with Dave Benson. I think this is the same item.
Yes.
I'm a little reluctant to surrender the council's authority to approve new meter rates, particularly downtown. Am I speaking of the right report, or am I?
Yes, you are speaking of the right report. Okay. So, performance-based pricing, we were directed to come up with a plan. This is the result of our stakeholder advisory committee for our plan. Other cities are doing this. This is best practice in other cities that has been effective. One of the things to keep in mind with the adjustments based on data is that not only is it possible to increase, it's also possible to decrease. So that provides better efficient use of the whole parking management system. So folks who maybe don't want to pay for the higher demand areas and would prefer to park a little farther away from their destination would have that option. And then we are pricing where the higher demand is in a manner that's effectively managing the parking.
So, Commissioner Fritz, I don't want to take you off the, can I ask a follow-up on this issue? And thank you for highlighting it, Commissioner Saltzman. Thank you for addressing it. So I want to make sure I understand what you're proposing. So if I'm hearing you correctly, just tell me if I'm wrong. I'm hearing you say that you want to have this new rate structure that you would give the bureau director or the commissioner in charge the discretion to propose a change to that structure, but it has to come back to the city council for discussion and approval. Is that correct or not correct?
It would come back as part of the transportation fee schedule. And this is
so help me as okay. A relative newbie here, coming back as part of the transportation fee schedule, is that when
the budget. That's when all of our fees come before council
okay.
as part of the budget process.
So that you cannot change it in the meanwhile. It has to come back as part of the process.
Correct. This would be an annual adjustment based on data
okay. Between
two goalposts that council, what we're requesting today. It would be setting the goalposts between $1 to $5 an hour with incremental increases of no more than 20 cents, 40 cents, or 60 cents annually. Based on the data
collection.
But you
could not change them at the discretion of the commissioner in charge or the bureau in between those
budget processes. No, it would be annual. It would only be once a year.
Got it. Okay.
And it would be as part of the whole budget process.
Well, I think that would be helpful to have that written down.
I agree. It does. That's not how I read this, to be honest with you.
It's incredibly nuanced, which is why we're sitting here.
Okay, thank you.
So it's the range that is set annually by transportation fee schedule
no.
or the actual
no.
parking rates?
The increase or decrease.
Okay.
Or decrease. Keep in mind, there is most likely decrease.
Right, okay.
There is a floor, Commissioner, which is $1, because that's cost to maintain the system. So rates could go down. But the $5 is a horizon, $1 to $5. The rate increments come back, as Melissa said, as a part of data, and in increments of 20, 40, or 60 cents based on some thresholds established in the manual.
Once
an area gets to $5, some years in the advance, then the whole rate range would come back to council to be reestablished.
Okay. So right now, any increment between that $1 and $5 does get approved in the transportation fee schedule?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And we can make that more clear.
So continuing on, again, thank you. Appreciate your forbearance. It's not clear to me how decisions are made about the event districts. It says that the A threshold is at least 10,000 attendees, but not whether that's an absolute trigger or whether there's some discretion allowed in that. Currently, it's only the Timbers matches that are event priced. What would be the process for deciding whether the Thorns or a future baseball club or anybody else would be charged event pricing?
So we worked with the Rose Quarter as well as the Convention Center on that issue, and they actually come up with attendance estimates for each one of their events. They do that to adjust their own parking rates ahead of time, so they have about a six-month calendar where they're forecasting their attendance. And then based on that forecasted attendance, you would work with the stakeholder advisory committee around that event district to determine if an on-street event rate would be warranted based on the projected attendance. So for small events and within the Rose Quarter, you would not implement on-street event rates. It would only be triggered for the larger events.
But who makes that decision?
It's the same as the performance-based pricing. So there's thresholds, there's guideposts, and there's incremental increases based on data collection of occupancy and how the system's getting used.
I think
a
more direct answer.
Yes. That has to come to council.
Yes. Because I know that's where we got trips up last time.
Correct.
We were looking at that.
This, again, would have to come through in the transportation fee schedule. There wouldn't be just random adjustments. It would be an annual process. For a couple of reasons, we can't do data collection more than once a year. It's too expensive.
Okay, so obviously, Mayor, during the budget process, you're going to have to schedule a particular hearing on things like this, I would think, because people do care about where they get to park and where they don't get to park. My final question is about, or for at least for now, is about the truck loading zones. Mm-hmm. Is there a, this is on page 62, is there a rule about it has to be a commercial truck, or does any truck get to park in a truck loading zone?
There is rules. There's code that dictates who can use a truck loading zone. What sort of vehicle can park in it, how long they can park in it. It's all dictated in Chapter 16.
But the challenge is, what if somebody's got a big truck and they're not necessarily delivering to a business? They may be delivering to something else or just using a truck loading zone because they happen to have a big loading truck. They own a big truck. How do you differentiate? How does
enforcement uses their discretion in the field?
What is the rule? If you're a truck, do you get to park in a truck loading zone?
Typically, it's a registered commercial vehicle, generally has signage on the side of the vehicle, and again, at the discretion of the enforcement personnel. If someone came with my pickup and I wanted to park in there, I would be illegally using the zone. If I wanted to deliver something not in a loading zone, the city has a permit process where I could actually, quote-unquote, bag a stall and use it for unloading for those purposes.
Well, I understand that the Parks Bureau has had hundreds of dollars of tickets for using the loading zone by Director Park, for example, even though they've got trucks, they're using it for a purpose. So, and then that comes into conflict with others who may be wanting to load and unload in those zones and not being clear as who's allowed to, who's going to get a ticket. So I would suggest that this needs more clarification, even though I appreciate it going from 44 to 4 zones. It needs to be clear as to what the purposes are, not just whether it's a truck or not.
Okay, so this is not addressing that in this manual. This is just to reduce the number of signs that we have. It's not talking about how the zones are used. That is all, again, that would be a code review, Title 16.
It doesn't deal with the rules against which a citation is issued.
This is just to reduce the number of signs for a more efficient management of the system. And the Freight Committee, we met with them 3 times, and they're highly supportive of this approach. It was mostly just to manage the system. This isn't about policy. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Public testimony?
Yes, we have 5 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Tony Jordan, Terry Parker, and Rick Michelson.
2 minutes, please. Name for the record. And colleagues, I am going to set over item 655. That is the establishing a priorities framework for the City of Portland Smart City PDX initiative. This is a resolution. There is no way we are going to get to it today, so I'd like to move it to Thursday, June 21st at 3:30 p.m.
Thank you.
Hello, Commissioners. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I hope I can thank you later. So I'm going to move this up for approving this critical policy on my 40th birthday. I also, I've been here for like several hours. I might go a little over time. I hope that's okay.
Birthday present, but please do state your name.
My name is Tony Jordan, and I'm the founder of Portlanders for Parking Reform, and I've served on as a volunteer on four stakeholder parking committees in the last 4 years, including the committee that produced this manual. Access, equity, safety, sustainability, affordability, these are all critical issues that parking policy has an impact on, and it's important that we look holistically at our transportation and housing network when we think about parking and transportation. Is access to downtown and our commercial corridors equitable, safe, and affordable to all Portlanders now? Is the status quo sustainable as it is? Can we keep things the way they are and meet critical environmental and sustainability goals? And I don't think so. Cheap and free parking leads to congested curbs with little turnover, and people, poor, rich, or in between, waste valuable time circling for parking, often to eventually give up and park further away paying the same price to park in what you might call a crudo spot out by the freeway, or that someone's paying to park in a primo spot right in front of the restaurant where everyone wants to be. Time is money, and often time is worth more to people with less money and less leisure time than to office workers with flexible schedules. Performance parking management uses pricing not as a tax, but as a way to allow people to make their own educated choices about how they value their time and their money. And people do care about where they get to park, and that's important. With properly managed parking, the parent with grumpy kids can find a convenient spot and complete an errand quickly. That might be worth an extra 50 cents or a dollar. With performance parking, people with disabilities will have a greater likelihood of finding a space near their destination. When people can find parking, they make fewer turns, which makes our streets safer. They drive fewer miles, which makes our air cleaner. And with properly priced parking, more people will take other modes, which makes our city work better. This policy isn't something we made up. My mentor, Professor Donald Chu, presented these ideas in his 2000 book, The High Cost of Free Parking. San Francisco and other cities have implemented them starting in 2011, and Portland's been discussing and debating this for 3.5 years. I've been to pretty much all of the parking meetings that have happened in this city, and I know people don't want to pay more for parking. But in all those meetings, I've yet to hear a better solution to the lack of access, the pollution and danger that parking congestion causes, than performance pricing. We can't afford to spend millions and millions to build massive public garages, and if we could, it would be an ecological and traffic disaster. We can't add on-street parking, and our policies are leading to removing on-street parking for bike racks, transit lanes, and drop zones. So really, from what I can tell, the options are to adopt these best practices we have or to do nothing and let people not have access to downtown. And I suggest we do something. Thank you.
Very well said. And happy birthday.
Thank you.
It's a heck of a way to spend your birthday.
It's a labor of love.
Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Michelson, and I'm the chair of the Northwest Parking SAC and also a member of this SAC that worked on this project here. I think we need to look at this as an incremental step. It's really the first time that these policies and things have been put down on paper in a way that people can understand them, and that's a great step forward. I believe, however, that probably in the next year or two, perhaps when the next rate increase comes through, you're really going to be wanting to look at some of these and change them and adjust them. So I support their adoption today with the understanding that it's a step down the road. We've been working on making changes in Northwest parking for years, and it's a very slow process. But if you don't take the first step, you never get any farther beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question?
Commissioner Fritz.
I support what you just said, and the first part of this ordinance says that they're implementing the guidelines compared in the manual, but then it says it's binding city policy. Isn't it going to be more difficult to make those adjustments if everything in it has to come back by ordinance? And changes to anything in it?
Well, I have to admit that I'm happy that Northwest is exempt from these guidelines because we have another policy going on. But I think, I think it's easier to respond and make changes to something, to guidelines that are down and adopted, than it is to continue the way we are that has nothing adopted. And I think this puts us in a framework of how rates are going to be determined, what the timing of those rate changes is going to be, and how we approach council and who we approach in order to make those changes along the course of time. I'm not sure that really answers your question, but it's all pretty new.
Yeah, so making everything in it set in stone seems premature, perhaps.
I think if we were not going to come back and look at these for 10 years, it would be premature to be adopting it today. But since these are going to continue to be worked on, I think it's better to take this step and not delay it for another year. As Tony says, we've been trying to get to this piece of this project for 3.5 years now.
Yeah, I'm not saying that we shouldn't adopt it. I'm just saying that perhaps we should remove the clause that says it's all binding city policy to allow some adjustments as we go along.
Yeah, we can definitely take a look at that.
Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon. Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. I'll try to summarize some of this because I wrote it for 3 minutes. Equity is totally missing when a developer can purchase a property in or adjacent to a lower density neighborhood and construct a large apartment complex, which in turn creates a parking deficiency on nearby streets. The crux of this inequity is created by city policy that allows housing to be constructed without minimum off-street parking requirements. The developer makes a profit while the rest of the neighborhood takes a hit with the negative impact of having the streets full of cars and or the residents are required to purchase parking permits, thereby subsidizing the profits of the developer. When this happens, the developer actually ought to be able should be paying for those parking permits for the residents in perpetuity. When you have streets that are full of cars, there are safety issues for emergency vehicles, garbage trucks, bicycles. There are visibility issues. There's access issues with service and delivery vehicles and even access for mobility impaired people to access things like the TriMet lift. People that use an alternative means of transport also have cars. A similar statement is continually vocalized by bicyclists as an excuse for not paying their own way for the privilege of having specialized bicycle infrastructure. The city's own study suggests 72% of households have cars. Is the absence of on-site parking an attempt to dictate to renters they should not have a car? 59% of low-income people drive to their place of employment. Is the elimination of off-street parking with affordable housing a form of income discrimination? Having to pay to park on the street in front of your own house so a developer down the street can make a profit is totally unjust. In that motorists already pay a variety of taxes that fund the streets curb to curb, establishing curb space as an additional pay-to-use commodity is a form of discrimination. This is especially true when curb space is taken up by bike lanes with no charges or user fees assessed to on bicycling. I believe that you need to require off-street parking for new development. I've listed how it should be. My neighborhood agrees with that. Rose City Park does. Choice in housing, we talk about choice in housing, but we want to dictate transportation mode. And I want to say that drivers are the most underserved community on any city committees, even more so than communities of color and whatnot. Drivers just are not on transportation committees. And I know I talked to you about that when you first became mayor on a one-to-one, and it still isn't happening.
Very good. Someday when I'm the transportation commissioner, I'll look forward to working with you, Terry. Thank you for your testimony, and happy birthday.
Thank you. I hope so.
All right, next. Was it two more?
Two more.
Very good.
Reza Farhoudi and Stephen Leem.
All right, welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Reza Farhoudi. I'm also on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee that guided the development of this manual and representing the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. And on behalf of the PDNA Planning and Transportation Committee, I urge you to adopt the manual that's before you today. The idea to study performance-based parking was formed from a recommendation of the Downtown Meter Rate Adjustment Subcommittee way back in 2015. I was also on that committee. And the idea, it's an intuitive concept, really. Set the pricing to ensure optimal utilization of the on-street supply, and studies have shown that to be 85%. So what does that get you? There's two things. One, it reduces the need to circle around the block, encourages the use of our off-street garages, and that reduces congestion, it reduces greenhouse gas emissions, it makes for a more safe and livable neighborhood, and also increases turnover. It helps the economic vitality of our businesses, so that's also really important. Another thing that this manual will do is that it will codify the net meter revenue allocation policy that's used in Northwest Portland today. It allows meter revenues to be used for the benefit of the area in which it is generated. So you can use it to pay for transportation demand management programs, such as the transportation wallet, and pay for needed projects to improve multimodal access and safety. The problem with this right now is that this manual will not apply. This policy will not apply to the downtown meter district, which includes the Pearl, and also downtown, Old Town, South Waterfront, Goose Hollow. We have thousands of residents and employees in these neighborhoods, a lot of low-income residents as well. And we really think that we need to have some access to this to meet our own priorities. So we thank PBOF for listening to our concerns and issuing a memo to staff to review this policy in TRN 3.102. And we know it's a long process, but it's kind of always is like this with parking committees. It's kind of the circle of life. You know, we had the Central City 2035 Committee, then the Downtown Meter Rate Subcommittee, and then finally this committee. So we look forward to working with the city to meet the transportation needs of the Pearl District without making a major impact to the PBOT General Fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor. My name is Stephen Lin. I'm the owner of Under You for Men retail stores. We're located at Southwest Park in Washington. The store is the largest men's underwear store in North America, and it takes up a quarter city block. I also represent a few of the businesses in the West End, and I'd like to say that overall, anecdotally, with conversations with those West End businesses, we actually support performance-based data parking structure. I can tell you from my own business, once Sunday parking went into place, my business increased. We are seeing better turns, and we actually would like to see parking times for Sunday morning before 1 o'clock even added. Sunday is our second busiest retail day now. Not number 5 or 6 like it used to be years ago. It's now number 2. These are important changes that have taken place, and it's data performance on parking that will make a difference for us. 40% of my current customers come in by car. I'm one of many businesses that also offer Smart Park vouchers to my customers with a $25 purchase. We also support our employees so they don't drive down with mass transit subsidies and that. So parking is still an important aspect of what we do every single day. Database is great. This data-driven pricing is an excellent model, but it also misses future. And how does this process handle future needs? And I'm going to bring one to your attention that's very important to me right now and to many of the other big businesses that support, that are getting, that need to be able to be supported when we're going up against likes of, for instance, Amazon. That's in-store shopping on the web, but in-store pickup. That particular business model is becoming more and more prolific across the city. I'm going to give you the example of Nordstrom's right now today has in-store pickup, and they pick up, the customer picks up on Southwest Park, double parking almost 5-6 times a day. I've just seen it all the time. They have added over 1,000 square feet of in-store pickup on that Southwest Park entranceway with no short-term quick parking ability. My store is the same. With dozens of in-store pickups, because they shop on the web, pickup in-store is the comfortable, easy way. That's how you support small business. That's how you support a structure of businesses being able to go up against the big internet commerce businesses. I'd like to see some areas like this. I'd also like to see a little bit more of an outreach to the small business in my neighborhood, the West End. Literally none of us knew that this process was going on. We'd like to be inclusive. We're not part of the stakeholders' committees. Most of us are not members of those big organizations, which are larger developers than that. There needs to be some outreach to those of us in small business.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And that's really interesting testimony. Yeah, I learned two things I did know. Number one, the Sunday becoming the second most vibrant day for shopping. And I'm going to ask around because that's interesting to me. And the second thing, this discussion about the change in the business model from buying online but picking up in person. That's good feedback.
I have another long list. I'll be emailing it in.
Great. Excellent.
We have the largest men's underwear business in the country.
I didn't know
fantastic.
That
thank you.
Thank you. Free advertising, everybody. Free advertising. Good. So that concludes our public testimony. Anything else before I move this one along to second reading? Commissioner Fritz.
I would like to meet with you over the next week, Commissioner Saltzman, to discuss both whether it's binding city policy and then to clarify both some of the equity requirements and also what comes to council and what doesn't, or when it comes to council, if that be acceptable to you.
Yes.
So
yes.
There may be some amendments next week.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Good testimony, good presentation. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Last but not least.